From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made last night at district office, where Rochester City School Board members collectively voted yes on Superintendent Terry Dade's proposed cuts in the Rochester City School District. A board vote of yes, five yeses from individual members, two no votes. Dade's original recommendation would have laid off more than 200 district employees, including about 150 teachers, but a last-minute change reduced that number of teachers to 109. More than 90 community members signed up to speak before the vote last night. Parents, teachers, students, and their advocates made emotional pleas, shared stories about the relationships between students and their teachers, and asked the board to vote no or at least postpone the cuts until the end of the school year. The board's final vote again was split with five yes votes from Commissioners Beatrice LeBron, Elizabeth Hallmark, Cynthia Elliott, Judith Davis, and Willa Powell, and Board President Van White and Commissioner Natalie Shepard voting no. What was one of the board's most, possibly one of the board's most contentious and emotional public meetings on record, wrapped up with an agitated crowd chanting shame. Now school communities are left with questions as to what will happen next. Teachers and others concerned about the trauma they say students will endure are preparing for how to talk to students, students in grades K through 12. And presidential candidates Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren were found tweeting their support for teachers and students. Meanwhile, Superintendent Dade said he'll be seeking more than $20 million along with program cuts and cost controls to balance the budget. This hour, we have a chance to sit down with three board members to discuss the events of last night, to hear about their individual votes at length, and to talk about what we'll see in the district in 2020. I'd like to welcome my guests who were up late last night. My thanks to them for coming in, being accessible, as always. Van White is here, the president of the Rochester City School Board. Thank you for coming back.
Yes, good morning.
Reverend Judith Davis is here, commissioner for the Rochester City School Board. Thank you as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
And my thanks to Natalie Shepard, commissioner for the school board. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We have a lot to talk about this hour, and I'm sure our listeners may have questions or feedback. It was a long night for everyone, many people watching on Facebook Live, probably more than 100 people in the room sharing their feedback. And again, a lot to talk about. And we always value long-form conversations on this program, especially with issues as important as this one. So thank you again for being here. I'd like to start with giving you all an opportunity to speak at length about your individual votes. As I mentioned, Reverend Davis and Van, Reverend Davis, you voted yes on the proposed cuts, and Natalie and Board President Van White, you voted no. I'd like to start with you, Van. Talk about why you chose to vote the way that you did last night.
Well, a lot of people don't know this, but I've spent probably the last at least 2 to 3 weeks trying to see if I could arrange a situation where we left nothing on the table. My concern was that there was considerable conversation that had yet to be had over cuts at central office. I also think that aid in Albany, whether it was a short-term spin-up loan or discussing foundation aid and the impact of the case for fiscal equity and why the state hasn't done what it needs to do and how that might have put us in a predicament. And then finally, I thought that there should be additional conversations about our collective bargaining units and what they should do. So I really had worked until the 11th hour, and many of my colleagues could tell you that I was speaking to them even during the course of the meeting. In short, my feeling was we left money on the table. And my view is that we should have had additional conversations, even if it meant, for example, until Monday, because we had leaders in Albany who were willing to come to Rochester have a conversation between, let's say, for example, Adam and Terry and other people who were responsible for providing the resources. So my initial feeling was, and there was a lot of reasons why I voted the way I did, I just feel like in a situation like this where you're talking about children and their relationship with adults, that you can't do enough to try to reach a resolution. And so I felt we should have deliberated some more. But let me just say this, and I know you just asked us how we reached our vote. And there were some other reasons behind my vote. But the other thing I want to say is I think it is important that we not delve on the negative, that we not delve on our differences. At this particular point, the decision has been made, and we have to start talking about how do we make sure that the progress that this district has seen in its graduation rates, its out-of-school suspensions, the nominal increases that we've seen in ELA and math scores, how do we make sure those are not jeopardized? And I'm concerned And that was one of the reasons why I voted the way I did. I'm concerned that mid-year cuts jeopardizes that progress.
You mentioned state leaders coming to Rochester on Monday. Who are some of those leaders, and what kinds of conversations do you think you'll be having?
Well, I don't think there's any prohibition in me saying this. I know I've shared this with each and every one of my colleagues. I was trying to work out a last-minute opportunity to dialogue about solutions. Chancellor Rosa, to her credit, was in constant contact with me, with Terry. She said, literally, "My bags are packed. I will come to Rochester yesterday or Monday and do what I can do to facilitate a conversation between the folks here." So that was really encouraging. I mean, she really, a lot of people don't know this, probably learning it for the first time today. In my mind, she really exercised the kind of leadership that is needed here. When there's a crisis, sometimes people entrench themselves in their respective positions. Not saying that happened here, but she was willing to come and try to facilitate a peaceable, practical conversation focused on solutions. And my thought was, if that conversation takes place Monday, there's no extended dollar amounts that we would have to expend to do that. Because these people, even though we made the decision yesterday, they're not going to be officially laid off until the end of this month. So my feeling was, the phrase is used a lot, don't leave any money on the table. And I fear one of the consequences of this is, there, as we still try to make up this additional deficit, the only place to get it is Albany, because the unions have been very clear. If and people may not like this position, but I think their position is, you didn't work with us when we were trying to work with you. We got nothing more to put on the table. So that's my concern about where we're at. But let me repeat, and let me say for maybe the first time today, I don't want this to delve into a conversation about our differences. While I disagree with my colleagues, I think their decision was rational. I thought it was the wrong decision, but I think it was rational. I think people were concerned about our status as fiduciary agents. So, I have nothing but respect for their decision, but I disagreed. But I cannot, nobody here can sit here and delve on what happened. We got to look forward.
Will Commissioner Rosa be coming on Monday still? Is that meaning
no,
still?
No. I mean, I just talked to her again. I probably talked to her multiple times over the last 48 hours. And we were just sort of just the last hour just talking about what happened and trying to dissect it. But at this particular point, the whole idea was to have her come and conversate and bring people together just to see. And if on Monday evening it didn't work out, the thought was we would vote and we might have had the same result that we had today. But it's not in me to sort of leave unresolved issues without really trying to maybe have additional conversation. And that's not to say people didn't really try. I know Terry tried. I know Adam Urbanski tried. But I'm just of the mindset when it comes to children and comes to potential damage that might be to occur to our children, that you should keep on trying. And my proposal was to try at least until Monday. It didn't work out, so we're here. And as a team, as a family, as Terry says, we got to move forward.
The word family was used a lot last night. Conversations about that. I have additional questions regarding the state. It sounds, the impression I'm getting from your remarks is that there is some kind of open door. If she's willing to sit down, perhaps that opportunity will exist in the coming weeks or months. We'll address that in just a few moments, but I'd like to give Commissioners Davis and Shepherd a chance to weigh in on their individual votes. Commissioner Shepherd, you also voted no. And I recall listening to the meeting last night, you said you were moved by the testimony of the teachers and the students specifically.
Yeah, specifically the students. So for me, the bottom line is the impact that any of our decisions have on students. And when we're talking about a fiscal crisis, which we're talking about now, you either need money or you need to have some sort of alleviation in other areas for you to make decisions. So we obviously, the first thing that we did was ask the state for more money. They said no. I also have been in contact with Terry over the last couple of weeks. And I've given him different options to take to the state that didn't have anything to do with them going in their wallets. And they said no. And so for me, I don't know what else it would take for anybody to move to understand that this is a crisis. We even heard in one of our meetings that, state legislators weren't even considering looking at anything that we have going on here in Rochester until after the holidays. So for me, that means that they just discount our students and don't really see the situation as a crisis and then just telling us to just figure it out. And I just reject the notion that we're just going to make decisions without everybody pulling their own weight. I don't accept that, and I reject it. And I needed the students to understand that if nobody else cares about you and what the things that you're saying, and I'm not saying any of my colleagues who voted whichever way don't care about students, but I just needed to, I needed the students to understand that I hear you, and I'm uplifting the fact that you want certain things. A lot of the things that, that I spoke about that I heard straight out of students' mouths was that they wanted their favorite teacher. They wanted teachers that have impacted them, teachers that they don't even have at this moment, but that they had at a lower grade level were being affected by these layoffs and disruptions. And they were advocating to keep them, even though they still didn't have them as a teacher. And those are the things that speak to me as a person in this position. And I've talked to Terry, too, about my decision, and he knew what, he knew which way that I was going to vote. And I just told him just straight out that he's doing everything that he's supposed to do in his role as a superintendent within the parameters that are set. And so then what does that mean for me as a leader, as an elected official? I need to work to, you know, help with the parameters that you have to abide by. And so for me, that looks like advocacy. And I've continuously said that the advocacy doesn't stop at the school board. Like, there's another level of government, other levels of government that impact the decisions that we have to work within. And I don't believe in dead ends. And I know I put forth a lot of solutions that are unpopular with certain groups or individuals, but I just don't believe in a dead end. If there's a law that's in the way, we need to change the law. I mean, it's really that simple for me. And that's how I've always operated and will continue to operate. So I needed the students to understand that no matter what happened last night, that their advocacy and the things that they wanted to talk about, it definitely impacted my decision.
One of your colleagues, Commissioner LeBron, mentioned that if a decision was not made now and cuts were not made now, you wouldn't be able to make payroll in March. Did that factor into your decision? I mean,
Can I say something to that? Because she said it, and I didn't want it to sidetrack the conversations, but I, with an hour before that meeting, 2 hours before that meeting, I had a meeting with the folks from the comptroller's office, and they told me in no uncertain terms that was not accurate, that it was a matter of the city, you know, the city collects the taxes for us, and they give it to us at a certain schedules. They agreed to give it to us earlier than they're supposed to. It's our money from the tax levy. We knew prior to yesterday, I think for quite a while, that the city was going to give us that money. So I just want to be clear. I didn't want to bring it up yesterday because I didn't want to have some public debate about it. Now, May is a different situation, right? But March, there, and then after they told me that, I asked Terry because it was said in a meeting 2 meetings ago. And I was really concerned about that. So I asked the comptroller's office, and the gentleman who heads that division told me in no uncertain terms that was not going to be the case. And then I asked Terry, are we going to make payroll? And the answer to that was no. Yes, we are going to make payroll. So there's never that, you know, my concern about those kinds of things. We're in a bad enough situation, but you already got people worried about whether they're going to have jobs or not. You don't want people who are still on payroll and have not been cut to think, oh, we may not even get to payroll in March. So again, let me reaffirm. The comptroller's office told me hour and a half before that meeting that was not accurate. So I don't want anybody out there thinking, oh, we're the ones left over. Is there a problem that we might not make payroll? That is not a problem for March. Absolutely not.
I don't want to characterize her vote based on that.
No.
That's just one thing that I heard.
Sure.
She also expressed concerns about the financial crisis and fiscal responsibility. So that is not the reason she voted yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she was unable to join us today, but was willing if her schedule had changed. So I don't want to mischaracterize
sure.
why Ms. LeBron voted that way. Reverend Davis, you voted yes to the cuts. Mm-hmm. Let's give you an opportunity to share the reasons behind your vote, if you can get right up close to your mic.
Okay, thank you. One of the major roles of the board is the fiscal oversight. One of the major roles of the board is the fiscal oversight of the district, of the school district. And I think what's important to understand that this moment last night was years in coming. And reality is, even before some of the speakers who spoke were born, because we have very young people speaking as well. Even before they were born, this moment was already on the way to coming. When it comes to fiscal oversight for the past years, especially the last 3 years, our expenditures have been greater than our revenue. Rather than years ago to address the expenditures and begin to find ways to reduce our expenses, we went to the bank account. And so to cover the gap or the shortfall, we used cash in our bank. We didn't do that 1 year. We didn't do that 2 years. We can go back 3 or 4 years that was done. At this point, there's no money, and we went negative $8.9 million. I mean, it's been rectified at this point, but I'm saying that's where we were. On top of that, we learned this year that under budgeting had been taking place, at least for the last 2 years. So even though we thought by taking the money from the bank account to cover the shortfall was making us flush, it wasn't. We were still negative due to all the under budgeting that was a part of our budget. So due to poor fiscal oversight is how this train started coming down the track. It is unfortunate that this was the moment and this is the day that we had to deal with that train. It arrived, it's here. And we simply do not have the finances to cover all of our expenses, and we're in the hole $65 million. So for myself, it was to address my role as a fiscal oversight to stop the train, to address the train that's here. And I voted for the cuts for myself in the interests of the district, in the interests of the students and parents, et cetera. And I don't want the students and parents and staff and community who came to speak to think that their voices weren't heard, that their pain wasn't felt. In fact, if we look at from November 12th, when Superintendent Dade announced the cuts of, I think, about 168 educators, the district was hearing what everyone was saying, and they were working diligently to find ways to reduce the number of teachers, the number of non-teaching employees, the number of paraprofessionals, et cetera, that would be impacted. So November 12th, 168 teachers was announced. The superintendent and district worked. And by December 2nd, that number was down to 150. By December 17th, that number was down to 144. And by December 19th, last night, it was down to 109. So I want the students and the parents and the staff and community to know that we heard and we worked diligently to reduce the number of persons impacted. But we still have the train here, and we still have to address that it has arrived. In total, we include all of the unions. We started at 287 people impacted, and from the work that was done from November 12th to December 19th, that number was brought down to 155. Another aspect that the persons present last night didn't get to hear is there was a resolution, 544, last night, and that resolution was recalling people back to positions. So I want it understood that everyone was heard, there was impact, but the train is still here. So that's why I did agree with the cuts, and I believe that the administration will continue to seek ways to be able to recall individuals back to their classrooms. But I have to, as the fiscal manager, one of them here, I can't continue the financial decisions that got us here. So I found that unconscionable, to continue the types of financial decisions made, to continue to with those that kind of impact, and to continue to go into the hole. As it talks about March and May, I thought I also heard March, actually, when we were a part of the meeting, so I would check that. And it is true that if we continued and didn't make cuts now, we would continue to go $1.7 million in the hole. And the superintendent asked, where will we get, what else are we going to cut, you know, right now? And I would hate to see essential services, et cetera, all the activities that students enjoy. I just didn't see any other way. And it is our legal responsibility as board commissioners to ensure that revenue and expenditures, that they match. One thing I do want to uplift that did come through is that we do have some systemic issues that come with this. So we have a policy of last in, first out. That impacts the very teachers that the students were talking about over the last 2 weeks. The new teachers, the innovative teachers who are coming in with energy, they're last in, and they're the first ones to go out. In addition, with that policy, it's well known nationally that there's a disproportionality in the race of employees that are a part of that last in, first out. And that's part of the information I did share with the public, that when you look at the percentage that teachers of color and paraprofessionals and all the unions, the percentage that are African American, and compare it to the percentage that they're a part of the reduction in force, there's a disproportionality there. Now that we have reduced the original numbers from 287 down to 155, I don't know what the percentages are now, but that's something that you could ask the district to update those racial demographics.
I'm looking at some reporting done by my colleague Jeremy Mole at City Newspaper. This is a story from Tuesday where he says, quote, "The data doesn't bear out the concern expressed by some stakeholders in the school system that teachers of color are being laid off in disproportionately high numbers. Black teachers make up 13% of the teachers who received layoff notices, and Latinos make up 2% of the layoff pool, according to the union." As Commissioner Davis just said, those numbers are based on the 150-ish proposed cuts that Superintendent Dade had spoken about prior to making the last-minute change in the last day or so. And we can, of course, follow up with Jeremy on that. But I think the point that you're making, Judy, regardless, let's put numbers aside while they're important. But you have said to Jeremy and other reporters, any teacher of color that is laid right. off, that has an impact.
Yes, I did uplift the data that does show that if an African-American child has a teacher of color between third and fifth grade, that the African-American boys 39% more likely to not drop out of school, to actually finish school, and to go on to college. Also, teachers of colors are more likely to identify students of color who are talented and gifted. There were several other studies that I uplifted, so there is a known advantage. Even Dr. Urbanski agreed with the data that I shared, there is a known advantage to having a teacher of color in the classroom. But what is important about the data is that the teachers of color, African American teachers, are 12% comprise the whole teaching body, but they're 13%, they're 1% more than how much they comprise the RTA. So I guess the easiest way to do it is if you had 100 teachers and 10 of them were persons of color and the others were not, and there's a reduction in force, and the reduction in force is 70% teachers of color, that's disproportional to their composition in the original body of people. If there's only 10 people of color out of 100, but there's 70% of the reduction in force, that's the kind of disproportionality that I'm lifting up. And so in this case, they're 12% of the RTA, but 13% of the reduction in force. And what we had to take into account is the history that we already have a 90% students of color body being led and educated by 80% a white teaching staff. And so alone, separate from history, it doesn't sound like.
Are those numbers national or local? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Well, local is like 74% white, and I forgot the number for. It's 74% white teaching staff. And I'm not sure it's like in the 90s for the student body.
It's like 86%.
86% for the student body.
And it's just the inverse for the staff, pretty much.
Okay. I'm looking at Jeremy's data again. He says, well, roughly 55% of the district's 26,000 students are black.
Black.
31% are Latino.
Yep.
Just 13% of the district's 3,500 teachers are black, 7.5% Latino.
Yep. So the
that's according to the RTA. I apologize for interrupting.
Oh, no, that's fine. So I'm just trying to put it in context that we have a predominantly white teaching staff educating a predominantly of color student body. So we're already starting at a disproportional rate of the presence of teachers of color. And at the same time, when it comes to reductions in force, more of them are laid off.
I understand. I'm not an expert in this field at all. I understand there has to be some kind of formula by which layoffs are determined. And I'll ask this question to all of you, do you support the LIFO position, last in, first out, Natalie?
No, I absolutely do not. And since I've gotten onto this board, I have advocated in Albany with state leaders in regards to the harm that this and other restrictions that we're under when it comes to our staff in the district is just ridiculous to me, because I feel like you can't have it both ways. Either the state is going to say we support initiatives to bring more diversity amongst our staff, and then when it comes down to the wire of a situation like this, then there's crickets in regards to what they can do to give us a waiver or leniency on choosing our staff. That was one of the things that I requested that the superintendent asked. I said, you know, the worst they can say is no and just throw, you know, my request in the trash. And it really infuriates me, because I feel like we're always put in a position where we have to choose either or based off of someone else not wanting to make a tough decision because they're scared politically. That's not right. And for me, I haven't honed in on the racial aspect, although I do agree that is important. I've always honed in on the fact that it's about effective versus ineffective staff. And I truly, truly understand the benefit of having more staff of color so that our students can visualize themselves in different roles. And I also understand that as a parent, I wouldn't care what racial ethnicity you are, that if you are the best for being in front of my daughter, I want you in front of my daughter. And that's just the bottom line for me. But I do understand the other arguments in this. And another piece I do want to make is that it's almost as if the state will take positions that sound good for the moment. And then when it comes down to, okay, we need your assistance to do this, we need you to go to your colleagues and ask them to help us out. It's like, well, I've already done what I can, and it's like a dead end for them. And I just don't believe in dead ends. I'm just going to continue to say that. And I did want to bring up the fact that earlier was mentioned that one of the union stances was that, well, we didn't want to work with them. So when it comes time to do more work, because this is just the beginning of a very tough uphill battle, that it's almost like they won't work with us in the future. And that's just totally ridiculous to me. And I believe that one of the union leaders were on this show about a week ago or this week and talked about the situation being nonsense for us. That's nonsense to me. I can remember, and you know, not to put my business out there, but I was putting myself in through school, through undergrad and grad school, with a young child, and me and my daughter's father were not together. And when we had our daughter, we would never not put the things in her diaper bag that she needed because we were not together. That logic just doesn't make sense to me. And if they want to talk about this being for the kids, then it has to be for the kids. Who cares if an adult doesn't work for you? Like for me, who cares if we weren't on the best of terms? It's for my daughter. She needs this stuff. I'm going to do what I have to do. And he did the same. So I just don't understand that argument for them to take a stance like that, but then in the same breath say that what they do is for students and they're putting students first. That's hypocritical to me.
And that's why I think this is an opportune time. Now that persons are organized, instead, in addition to lobbying Albany for fiscal equity, to also begin to lobby Albany for some amendments to the seniority last in, first out principle.
So let me just say to Commissioner Davis's use of the analogy of the train, let me just roll with that for a minute. You don't leave the station, no matter where you've been, no matter how you got to the particular depot. You don't leave the station unless you're properly staffed and you have proper maintenance, right? Nobody goes on a long journey, gets on a train, unless it's properly staffed and it has full maintenance done to it. My point was, if you want to use that analogy, we are not properly staffed. Nobody disputes that midterm cuts are good for children. So nobody can say we're getting on a train that is properly staffed or has the proper maintenance. And I'm not saying that we should have, initially that was my position, and at least one other commissioner's initial position was to wait until January 30th to see whether there was going to be some additional fuel brought to the plane by the state, by the unions. But in the end, I was willing to settle for keeping the train at the station a little bit longer to make sure that we had proper fuel and proper maintenance. Because if you don't do that, you're going to get lost. The train may break down, that you might miss a switch in the track, or you could get an accident. So, you know, this analogy of, oh, well, you know, we this is a train, and this train had been in a bad place. Nobody's talking about where we've been. We're talking about where we're going. And we're going forward with now in classrooms right now where nobody disputes that this train is not properly staffed, that these classrooms are going to be short of teachers who have no familiarity with the cabin or the caboose that they're in. So I want to be clear about this. This isn't about trains. This is about children. And this is about adults who have connected with children. So you want to talk about listening to these folks? I listen to them. And I think that when you leave money on the table, and here's real, I don't disagree with what Commissioner Shepherd is saying, that I would prefer that leaders put their own agendas aside, don't look back, don't look in the rearview mirror. But I think that's what I'm concerned that people may do. But I got to tell you, I'm concerned that we have a problem bigger than being sound fiduciary agents now. But I'm going to keep it real with you. Because so now we've made everybody satisfied that we're sound fiduciary agents. What's going to happen to that increase in graduation rate? What's going to happen to those ELA scores and math scores that are incrementally, slowly going up that everybody's complaining about? Because I'm going to game this out. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Now they're going to say, oh, yeah, you're good. You're good fiduciary agents. But 3 months from now when them graduation rates come in and people start looking at those ELA scores and math scores, now what they're going to say, Commissioner Davis, they're going to say, oh, you know what? You're not even good academic stewards anymore. So my thing is, these aren't mutually exclusive approaches, that you can be a sound fiduciary agent. I don't buy this, that we just have to be a fiduciary agent. I think we can be both. And the way in this context to do it was to say, let's slow down the train a minute, just a minute before it leaves the station. Make sure it's properly staffed. Make sure there's proper maintenance. And all I was calling for was just keeping the train at the station for 3 or 4 more days so that we could have our cake and eat it too, so that we could be sound fiduciary agents and be good educational stewards. I'm warning you all. 6 months from now, what's going to happen is these people in Albany, you think you bought some time because now you've shown yourself to be an approved fiduciary agent? I'm telling you what they're going to be saying. And I don't want it to happen. I want to be wrong on this. They're going to be saying, oh, they're not even going to talk about us making the right decision last night. They're going to be saying, look at your graduation rates now. Look at your ELA scores right now. Look at your out-of-school suspension because you don't have those restorative justice workers around. That's what they're going to be saying about us. And all this stuff that, oh, yeah, you did the right thing last night, they ain't even going to think about that.
I just want to use, I'm not going to use the train analogy, I'm just going to speak in real terms, is that I'm frustrated with the conversation around needing more time when this is not something that happened in a vacuum. It didn't just happen a week ago when we're rushing at the last minute. And not only that, we had a previous state commissioner that said years ago, we warned the district's leaders about the way that they were handling finances and they did not listen to what we told them. I don't understand how, like, so for me as a state leader over education, how could you continue to let that happen? And in my opinion, I feel like this started years and years ago. And so for me, when we came down to the wire of finding out that this stuff was occurring back in September, no one batted an eye. And then the superintendent was telling us, these are the different options that we have. Crickets. And it wasn't until adults got pink slips 2 weeks before a vote that people started to say, oh, we have to do something. That's my whole issue with this, and it has always been my issue, is that people don't want to act or move, or they're not motivated by the simple fact that our kids need. That should be all that we have to come to the table to say. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. The way that it works is once you start impacting things economically, now people want to pay attention. And so for me, when we had our November 12th meeting, I suggested, based off of the things that I know and how I have seen people move, I go to Albany, I go to DC, and been doing it for the last 2 years, was there the first week I got onto the board 2 years ago and continuously go every single year. I understand what motivates people. And unfortunately, it's the money that motivates people. And so on November 12th, I went back and forth with the superintendent, not in a bad way, although, I did get frustrated, not specifically at him, but at the situation, because I said, if we're saying we got to do 18% cuts, then let's do 18% cuts. Because back in November 12th, that would have gotten people up and saying, oh my goodness, they're about to lay off about 800 to 1,000 people. We have to do something. Unfortunately, you have to press people's buttons like that when it comes to education. That's just ridiculous to me. And if those are the only things that are going to motivate people to move, then I'm willing to say, well, this is where we're going to be at. So what are you trying to do? And I know that's me playing hardball, but sometimes you have to play hardball, because at the end of the day, adults can pick up and move and find new jobs, find new homes. Children can't. They don't have the luxury to make that option for themselves. And so it's how hard are we willing to fight for public education? And are we willing to put our political careers on the line? That's just the bottom line for me. And I am, and I show it over and over again.
And I just want to address what President White said, is the train that I was talking about was not people. The train was the deficit, and the growing deficit that arrived here today that we had to address. And when those financial decisions were made over these past years, they were also making academic decisions, because the money is to fund academic improvement. So by being poor fiscal stewards in these past years, making poor decisions, they also were making poor decisions and making it, unfortunately, us unable to provide the resources that we need in order to have academic improvement.
Okay, I want to bring us back together for a minute, just because there's disagreement on some issues, there's disagreements on votes. That's the purpose of a board. Everyone has their own decision to make. But I do want to talk about the things that you all do agree on. One, there's a budget crisis. Two, you all care about students. And now we're moving into a portion of, or a phase of this situation that's going to be difficult, that will likely be traumatic for many students. And we have listeners asking questions about what are you going to do to help the students through these transitions. So with the remainder of the hour, I want to focus on some of those questions. I'm sure you all have your own ideas. And for people in the community that have been asking how they can help, whether it's financially, which is a complicated question, or otherwise, I think multiple people have mentioned we need to come together as a family. So before we talk about students specifically, do you think you are unified as a board moving forward, regardless of some of the disagreement regarding decisions? Do you feel like you as a collective body are now moving forward together?
Let me just say, I think there are instances where, like in anybody, look at Congress, look at the leaders in Great Britain and how they cuss and fuss literally in Parliament. In our Congress, for example, what's happening right now is no different. So I don't think we should be judged harsher than we would assess any other legislative body where there are differences of opinions. But I will say, having said that, I can think of instances where we've had unanimous votes. And by the way, last night's votes, although Commissioner Shepherd and I were in the minority on it, it was 5-2, right? So that, in most Democratic bodies, that's not a bad result. And then if you look at the vote to bring the lawsuit to defend democratic rights in this community, That was a unanimous vote, and we stuck together. And I could think of other instances where we've done that. Let me just say, and we're constantly figuring out how can we work together better as a body. I can't even count how many retreats we've had. There's that constant need to perfect the relationship as best you can. I think some of it happens over time. You get to know each other. You get to appreciate one's differences. Natalie will tell you, we got stuck in Philadelphia, I think, and we ended up having to drive, she and Vice President Ellie and I had to drive back to Rochester. We got to know each other a little bit better there. By the way, we'll have a new board in about 2-3 weeks. We'll have to get acclimated to one another. We're going to continue to do retreats. There will be votes where we'll agree unanimously. There'll be 5-4, 5-2 votes. There'll be 4-3 votes. But this is the nature of the democratic process. And I think because there's some occasional dissension or disagreement, that doesn't mean anything bad about us. We're just part of the American process. And then one other thing. On this particular vote, make no mistake about it. I'm getting behind. I said that last night. I'll say it tonight. And I'll say it tomorrow. I'm getting behind our superintendent. I'm getting behind my colleagues to make sure that we creatively, collaboratively come up with solutions that address the challenges that our families and children are having.
Come January, when teachers have been displaced, there are classrooms that are reformed. Just walk us through what that's going to look like for people who may not understand how all this happens. And how do you propose that teachers, support staff, maybe yourselves when you're in your buildings, how do you anticipate helping children who may be triggered or traumatized by further change in their life? So let's get down to talking about specifically how we're going to help students. I'll start with you, Commissioner Davis.
I did want to also answer the previous question. I'll no longer be on the board, so I'll be one of the people who's leaving. And so I won't be here to help to assist with the staff and with the children. The Distinguished Educator Report shared that the board has racial tension. And for myself, I believe that racial tension continues on the board and will need to be addressed next year. I do hope that we could engage in that collaboration that Superintendent Day talked about. If clergy or churches or counselors in the community could be of assistance in helping to provide comfort or a listening ear, I'm sure there are agencies and churches that would like to collaborate with the district. Rochester Acts even shared a letter with the board last night, and they're a conglomerate of several churches. So I would think about reaching out to the community, reaching out to the churches, and to increase the staff that could have an impact in helping the children and staff to negotiate the grief that they'll be going through.
Thank you. Commissioner Shepherd.
Yeah, so our staff and student support services team will definitely be at all of the schools supporting anybody that needs support through this transition. I do also know that the principals are working diligently as well to transition staff in and out of their school buildings and in and out of the classrooms, and obviously teachers preparing and trying to set up as fast as they can. And, you know, what I want to just say is that I would hope that every staff is taking the opportunity to as hard as it will be, to put their emotions in this time to the side just for a moment so that they can be the strength that our students need throughout this transition. And I know that's easier said than done, and I don't want to discount that adults are definitely hurting through this transition. But I encourage them to try to find the strength so that they can be there for our students, and letting our students know that transitions happen in life and sometimes you just can't control it. And this is one of those instances where they are not able to control a change, and just helping them through that.
Mm-hmm. Fan.
Yeah, I don't think I can add anything to that, really. I think everybody's often saying it's about the children. And sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. This is the time that it should be about the children, and it might be exceptionally difficult as a new teacher transitions into a classroom that they haven't seen before. They haven't seen the children before. The posters on the walls aren't theirs. But I think, as Commissioner Shepherd says, this is the time to put aside your own hurt. And this is a time, I know it's exceptionally difficult, easy for me to say on a radio show with a mic in front of my face, but this is a time to focus on healing, not hurt. And I don't, we have a great student staff and student support group. That's in fact why I'm wearing this ugly Christmas sweater. I'm going to their Christmas luncheon right after I leave here. And I'm just, I'm not the guy who goes to church every Sunday. I'm not that guy. I wish I was. But I tell you what, I understand the power of prayer. So I'm going to pray for, and that may not mean much to anybody. I'm going to pray for these folks because they are, As board members, we sit at 131 West Broad Street, and we're not going to have to deal with the consequences of our decision. That is now our decision. I'm not running away from it. That is now the board's decision. Our staff do. They are with these kids. And you, when you heard some of these kids crying and talking about their teacher was their friend and I'm just getting to like you. I mean, we heard lots of stories. There's pain associated with that. And these children already experienced trauma. But So that's why I focus on prayer. You ask me, what do I do? I know we have a great student support staff. Ruth Turner is awesome, and all her folks that work there, I know they're dispatched out to our schools whenever there's a problem. This is a long-term, very traumatic situation for our children. They will be there for them. And in terms of me, I of course go to the schools, but I'm not fooled by my ability to address this. But I do know, and I know this isn't a religious show and I'm not trying to make it, I do know the power of prayer, and I know how serious this is. And I since last night and before last night, and I know this may not mean much to some, but I'm personally praying for them because I know this is going to be challenging. Those tears that we saw, those are real. And the prayer is, let's see if we can get beyond the hurt. And this is not just for the students and the staff. This is for our leaders who, you know, suffer from the consequences of their decisions. I'm talking about the leaders who are making these decisions. I'm not talking about my colleagues, but people. There are consequences, emotional consequences. I'm not even talking about political consequences. There are emotional consequences. There's not a colleague who made the decision last night that I know didn't suffer some anxiety and real frustration over this decision. So I'm praying for everybody from 131 West Broad Street to our schools because they need healing now.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's hurt all around. There are people who are living within the city, people in the suburbs, wondering how they can help. We had a whole conversation on the show about how people in the suburbs can help the Rochester City School District. And we still have questions coming in from people throughout the community. One of them is Tom in Rochester. I'm not sure if we'll be able to answer these questions, but I just want you to get a sense, our listeners too, of the types of questions being asked and the goodwill that's out there. Tom in Rochester says, can we ask the millionaires and billionaires to help out with the district? I think there was a speaker last night who brought up Tom Golisano in the sense of if he were to give money to Strong Memorial Hospital, I was not there in person. I was only watching online, so I may need some help with this anecdote. But if something didn't go well there, he didn't like how his money was being used, he would have some say in how to fix it. I'm not anticipating that something like that will happen with the Rochester City School District, but I think people in the community want to know if money is coming in from the community in some way, first of all, can that happen? And second of all, how will that be managed? And the follow-up here is a question from Ronnie who says, what's the legality of the Rochester City School District accepting donations from the public? If people turned to the district and said, I'll give you this money if you spend it wisely, could we have a campaign to collect donations?
We get donations all the time. At the end of every meeting, my colleagues will tell you their resolutions to accept money and gifts and so forth. And so, yes, it could be done. The specifics of it, our legal department would have to work it out. But certainly, I don't think anybody would discourage a conversation about that. So the short answer to the question is absolutely we can accept gifts. There's a process for doing it. It culminates in the board passing a resolution that says, yes, we'll accept this gift.
And to be clear, that's not going to solve the budget crisis, but people are just wondering how they can help. What else would you all like to see from the community? What would you say to people who say, I understand everyone is hurting. If we're going to come together as a family, what can I do as an individual to help students, to help teachers, to help leaders?
Yeah, so I think what we saw last night and what I'm hoping is that the momentum continues to go and even increase as we start our next legislative session and beyond. I believe that last night, or through this situation, that we have birthed a new generation of leaders willing to step up. And I really want to see the adults in this community not only rally on their behalf, but rally with them and help lift them up, because we've heard a lot of strong speakers, students that are able to articulate their points and stances. They've been doing research, and it was just phenomenal to see. And sometimes, unfortunately, you may have to go through a crisis before you find that jewel. You get all that pressure, and then that jewel is formed from that. And I do believe that we should be rallying around the student leaders who have shown an interest in taking this fight to another level and continuing this thing on, and just giving them the support that they need, the guidance. Not that you need to take over, but give them the guidance. Let them know the tools, the different ways, and just be there as a support. So that was one major thing that I'm definitely going to continue on is helping this new generation, these fired up youth who are ready and willing to continue on this fight.
Commissioner Davis. That's exactly why I did share last night that I hoped that after this they wouldn't disband, but I encouraged persons to stay together, continue to fight. That was the whole platform of my campaign, was community organizing for school reform. This is the way to do it. And I do hope that they will come together and develop an agenda. We already know two items, fiscal equity, and we know we want to make some kind of changes to last in, first out, and to create that agenda. And I'd like to continue to be a part. One of the commissioners asked, as I depart the board, will I continue with the addressing the last in, first out? And I said, I will continue to look at how we can address legislation in that area. And I also will continue with the racial equity advocacy leadership team that I helped to institutionalize in the district this year, who has put together a comprehensive racial equity plan to address racism in education throughout the district.
As we wind down, we have our last couple, well, last minute, really. What's next with the state? What's next with conversations with Albany? And I'll open that up to everyone on the panel.
Well, let me just say, while I'm not as hopeful as I was yesterday, I think there is a commitment by most folks to focus in on children and the healing that has to take place, and to make sure that we can provide for our students. So I don't think the conversation with the state is going to stop. I'm concerned, as I said earlier on, that the conversation with our collective bargaining units may stop for a time. I'll be honest with you. I'm waiting a day. Maybe Adam's listening. I'm waiting a day, and I'm going to call him. That's how the hurt goes away. I can't get stuck in my own view of this. But I think they're a critical player, and I don't think we cannot have them at the table in terms of solving this problem, because otherwise what's going to happen is we're going to be completely dependent on the state. They are our partners. We got to bring them back in.
Go ahead. We have a couple seconds.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that we have continued to bring the fight to the state, and that I just see it being even more folks that are behind the agendas that we bring forth and that we collaborate on together. And we just continue to take this fight to another level and understand that the buck doesn't stop locally.
Thank you. Unfortunately, we're out of time. These conversations will continue. Commissioner Davis, we're going to bring you back to have a whole separate conversation about LIFO. But okay. I want to thank all of you for being here. I know it was a late night. Thank you for being so accessible.
Thank you.
Van White, Judy Davis, Natalie Shepard. Short break, more connections next.